Welcome to the 2 Acre Homestead Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa. And on today's episode, we're going to be talking about how to successfully grow a garden. Welcome to the 2 Acre Homestead. Come along with us on our journey from a small suburban homestead lifestyle to our new lifestyle, homesteading in the rural countryside of southern Arizona. We'll share with you our tips, tricks, successes, and failures from both our past suburban lifestyle to our new rural lifestyle, all on the 2 Acre Homestead. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. We're super happy to have you here listening today. So today we're going to be talking about how to successfully grow a garden. And you know, as of the recording of this, spring has already started here on our calendars. And it's go time for many of us. We're getting the gardens ready. We're getting reacquainted with our gardens. And you know, just dusting off all of everything from winter and starting to get our seeds going inside if you grow inside, or planting directly in the garden if that is what you so choose. But needless to say, for those of us that are gardeners, we are starting our gardening season, and it's an exciting gardening season here for 2023, filled with lots of hope, lots of inspiration, and you know, we always start off with lots of willpower. So hopefully this will be your year. I'm hoping it's my year as well. We're hoping to have a successful garden. Well, I have had successful gardens in the past, so I do want to share some of my tips and tricks with you guys. Now, before I start this episode, I do want to say we are on YouTube. So if you want to catch tips number 1 through 4, go ahead and head on over to our YouTube channel. Our YouTube channel is the same as it is here, the 2 Acre Homestead. And I just uploaded a video talking about growing a successful garden, same title as it is here, but I shared tips 1 through 4 over there on our YouTube channel. Now, here on our podcast, I'm going to be picking up with tip number 5. I hope you guys are ready for this because I've got a lot of information here to unpack. So if you need to go grab a pen and paper, go ahead, hit that pause button, grab a pen and paper, because there's a lot of information that I'm going to be throwing you guys way. So tip number 5 in growing a successful garden is watering. Water is key. Obviously, if you don't have any water, you're not going to be able to grow your plants successfully. But watering is more than just going out with your garden hose and spritzing a little bit of water on your plants and walking away and hoping and wishing that they grow to be big, beautiful plants that feed you and your family. It does not work that way. There are a few things that you need to know about watering plants. First off, you need to know the origin of your plants. Now, I say that because that's really important. Knowing the origin of your plants, where they found those plants growing originally, because that will tell you a lot about what that plant needs. Let me give you an example. For example, a rosemary bush. If you want to grow rosemary in your garden, let's say you're doing an herb garden and you're growing rosemary. Rosemary actually comes from the Mediterranean, where it's hot, dry, arid, doesn't get a lot of rain, and has sandy soil. So let's say you live in a place that is cool, damp, and has clay soil, and you're continuing to water your rosemary plant, and you've planted it in ground, guess what? you're not going to have a successful harvest of rosemary because the rosemary plant doesn't like to grow in those conditions. So knowing the origin of your plant will help you when it comes to watering your plant. So rosemary, for example, doesn't like a lot of water. On the other hand, watermelon, if you want to plant watermelon this year, guess what? Watermelon plants, most of your cucurbit plants, your cucumbers, your watermelons, your cantaloupes, all of those plants, guess what? They like lots of water. So those particular plants, you're going to always want to water them just a little bit more. Give them extra amounts of water because they are going to turn that into fruit that is very heavy with water. So that particular plant is going to want water. So just knowing the origin of where your plants come from, knowing the type of plant that you're growing, what it wants and what it doesn't want is an investment in your garden and in your time. Because let's face it, if you're overwatering a plant, let's say like rosemary that doesn't want all of that water, well, guess what? You're going to kill it. And then you've just wasted your time and your money and water. So knowing how to water your plants, knowing what plant wants, what amount of water is really key. The other thing is knowing when to water. Now, I happen to live here in the desert southwest of Arizona, so I live in a dry climate. For the majority of the year, it's very dry here. So the only time that we get high amounts of humidity is during what we call our monsoon season, which usually starts from June and lasts to the end of August. So pretty much our entire summer is extremely humid. And when I say extremely humid, I'm talking about maybe 55% humidity to about 80% humidity on any given day. Somewhere in there, that's where the humidity is going to be during our monsoon season. What I have found growing here in the desert southwest is watering in the morning is the best time for my plants. And there's a couple of reasons why. The first reason is the plants are, not that the plants go to sleep, but they seem to take up water better the earlier you can get out there in the morning, as opposed to watering in the evening. The other thing is I like to water in the morning because if my plants get any water on the leaves or if I'm having any issue like that, it'll burn off before the heat of the day. Especially when you're dealing with fruiting plants such as peppers. Yes, botanically speaking, a pepper or a chili, those are actually fruits. I hate to tell you that, but botanically speaking, they are. And when they get water on them, that can burn them. The mixture of the water mixed with the sun will burn the fruit or the peppers, and it'll create a black spot on your peppers. So I prefer to water those in the morning. That way, you know, it has a chance to dry off before any burning or scorching can happen. The other reason why I like to water in the morning is I do use a hose, and using a hose means that hose might be exposed to the sun. And typical of me, I tend to forget about the fact that when you first turn on the water hose in summer and that water hose has been exposed to the sunlight, guess what? It's going to be hot. The water coming out is really going to be hot. And if you're putting that right on your plants, well, you know, you can burn your plants. Ask me how I know, because I've lived it. I've done it several times. So I just prefer watering earlier in the morning. It just seems like it's better for the plants, and it's just better all the way around. Now, While we're on the subject of using a hose, let's talk about how to water. I prefer watering by hand. And there is certainly nothing wrong with doing that. Now, my preference is to use a hose, a water hose. I water by hand, and that's because I like to look at that. It gives me that chance to look at my plants while I'm watering them. It gives me that chance to be out there in my garden. I'm looking at my garden. I'm looking at my plants. I'm assessing each garden bed, each plant as to what it needs, what it doesn't need. Is it, you know, is there a lot of weed pressure? Am I getting a lot of pest? It just gives me that opportunity to water my plants and put some eyeballs on my garden. So I feel like I'm taking care of two birds with one stone when I hand water. There are other ways that you can water as well. There's irrigation. Irrigation is very, very effective because you're using a little bit of water that's going directly to where the root source is. Irrigation is perfect for areas like where I live in a desert. I know I live in a desert, but I water by hand. But irrigation is really good for desert climates or anywhere where you want to conserve water, because water is a resource that we all need to protect. There are other things that you can use as well, such as soaker hoses. I've used that plenty of times in the past, and I actually am a fan of soaker hoses when you have a small garden. When I was gardening back in Phoenix and I just had a very, very townhouse size backyard, I used a soaker hose and it was just perfect for watering my gardens there. And my garden survived with a soaker hose in 117 degree weather in Phoenix, Arizona. So, you know, soaker hoses are effective. The only downside that I would say to soaker hoses is when you're in extreme weather like that, whether it be extreme cold or extreme heat, you will have to replace them probably once a year because they're just sitting out there on top of the dirt, exposed to the elements, and the sun or cold will just eat it alive. So if you do choose to use a soaker hose, just know that is something that you probably will have to invest in annually. That is the downside to using soaker hoses. And you know, if I could just offer the suggestion, I would say steer clear of overhead watering. Overhead watering is, it can be very wasteful because what you wind up doing is watering everything and you may not want everything growing. If you have a garden like mine where I have several raised beds, I think I have like 15 raised beds, and then I have, you know, long rows and short rows, you know, there are things in between, like in my pathways, I don't want weeds growing there. So, you know, using the overhead water system, it may feel convenient and it is convenient. However, it comes with that downside of watering everything. And so, again, I highly recommend either water by hand or use, you know, like a soaker hose or use some sort of irrigation system to water your plants. Okay, so now let's move on to point number six. Point number six is the use of mulch. Mulch, mulch, mulch. And when you think you've used enough mulch, use more mulch. Why do I say that? I say that because mulch retains water and it helps to keep your soil relatively cool during the summer months. And that's important because of who lives in your soil, and you want those organisms living in your soil, things such as worms, the good guys, your worms, your mycorrhizae. You want all of those things living. If your soil gets too warm, then what happens, like, for example, with worms, they will go down, down, down further into the soil. They like the soil to be relatively cool. So the more you mulch, the cooler the soil, the more worms are going to want to live closer to where your roots are. And that in turn is going to be feeding your plants. So mulching is very, very important to the gardener. Now there's different types of mulch that you can use. There's sky's the limit, but I'm just going to name a few. I'm a huge fan of wood chips. I always have been. I always will be. Wood chips are just the best, in my opinion, when it comes to covering your soil.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Are you looking to build a homestead from the ground up? Or maybe you're looking to build an off-grid dream home, a vacation home, or maybe just a piece of land to call your own? Visit yourcheapland.com to buy rural land in the wide open spaces of southwestern United States. When you visit yourcheapland.com, they're here to help you, and with their help, you can do this. You can take your dream of owning land and make it a reality. Most down payments are only $294, including the document fee. Remember, everyone qualifies for financing at yourcheapland.com. Head on over to yourcheapland.com and start making those dreams come true. And now, back to our podcast. What I love about wood chips, and I'm seeing it this year in this particular garden, is the wood chips that I placed last year have now started to break down, and they've created this wonderful soil that is, it's just a beautiful crumbly soil. And that's really what you want as a gardener. And you get that with having good mulch. So I'm a huge fan of wood chips. Wood chips really keep the soil down, and they just add a lot of nutrients to your soil. How do you get a hold of wood chips? I actually contact my local arborist company. So there's a company out here that they do a lot of the taking down of trees, and they chop them. And I've called them, and I'm on a text message basis now with the head guy there. And when he's in our area, he'll just send me a text and say, "Hey, Lisa, I'm in your area. I'm just going to drop off some mulch." Great. Try to get in contact with your local companies like that. You can also, I've heard people also say that you can go to your dumps and source wood mulch from there as well. But just Google search, ask other people in your area how to get free mulch, because that's probably the best way to get it. So there's other types such as straw. I have a good friend of mine who used straw in her gardens, and she swears by them. She absolutely loves using straw as a mulch in her garden for the same reason that I love wood chips, because they break down. They keep the soil cool. The only thing about straw that I would caution you, she did have this issue one year where she sourced the straw from, it had been sprayed with something, and it caused some damage in her gardens. So just make sure where you're sourcing your straw, make sure to ask the question, has this been sprayed with any insecticides, herbicides, anything like that that's going to cause damage or add poison to your garden beds. Just make sure you know where you're sourcing it from. But other than that, straw is a really good way to mulch. Another good way to mulch is cover crops. Cover crops are crops that you can use, such as like hairy vetch. You can use field peas, anything like that to cover your garden. You're planting, you know, let's say, for example, field peas. You're planting a bunch of field peas in one area. And before they go to seed, all you're going to do is just chop them down and let those leaves kind of fall down. And, you know, that has become now your mulch. It's covering your particular soil. Because let's face it, if there's nothing growing in the soil, if there's nothing breaking down in the soil, you're going to lose nutrients. You're going to lose all of that. All of the good guys are going to leave because they want something to eat. So you have to constantly be feeding your soil. So that is one of the benefits of using a cover crop. And you can get really specific with your cover crops and say, you know, I want a particular cover crop that's going to add more nitrogen to my soil. So I'm going to plant this. Or, you know, I just want something just to simply cover, you know, keep a good neutral, pH neutral balance to your soil, what have you. You can get real specific with it. I don't have personal experience with using cover crops. I don't do that in my gardens, but I have seen a lot of people have good success with that. One thing I have had success with when I gardened back in our suburban homestead, the homestead we had just before this one, is chop and drop. Chop and drop is one of my favorite ways to cover and mulch. In our previous homestead, I grew so many artichokes, and I can never get enough artichokes. I absolutely love artichokes. I love to eat them and I love to chop and drop them. And so what I would do is after I was done with the plant itself for the year, meaning I've harvested my artichokes and or I've let it go to seed, or, you know, I've harvested the flowers. I'm done with it. What I would do is I would come through and I chop off all the leaves and I would lay them down as a living mulch. And what I loved about it is that it smothered out, because the leaves, if you place them just right, they cover up your soil, they smother out any weeds, and they break down and they add vital nutrients to your soil. Because for me, for where I live here in this area, artichokes grow almost like a perennial plant. They just keep coming year after year after year. And what they do is they produce what's called these pups or babies. They're baby artichokes that grow on the side, and you can chop those off of the mother plant and grow more artichokes. And so they just continuously grow. And if you've ever dug up an artichoke, you will know the roots of those artichokes are super duper deep. So the deeper the roots, the more nutrients it's pulling out. So by chopping and dropping, I just loved it because I was putting those deep nutrients back onto my soil. And every time I did that, every garden bed I did that, I always had really good produce coming out of that garden bed. So if you have anything like that, it doesn't have to be an artichoke plant. I've done chop and drop with several different types of plants, but any sort of, you know, big leafy green type of thing. You can even do kale. I've done that with kale before, used it as a chop and drop. It just adds tons of nutrition back into your soil. So any leafy green you can chop and drop right there, it's called, you know, just chop and drop in situ, right there where it is, and you're adding that nutrition back to your soil. So mulch, mulch, mulch. One thing, let me just circle back, going back to using wood chips when you are mulching. The more, the better. The deeper, the better. You want a very thick layer of mulch. Whether you're using wood chips, straw, cover crops, chop and drop, whatever it is, the thicker the layer, the better it's going to be for your soil. Because you're giving your soil lots of cover. You're giving the organisms that live in the soil lots to eat. And that means good biodiversity in your soil. Okay, point number 8, pest control. Let's face it, garden pest, it's inevitable. It's going to happen no matter what you do, no matter how much you try. You're going to get garden pest, whether it be some pest that's attacking your cucumbers or somebody that's eating your tomatoes, you're going to have garden pest. Now, when I talk about garden pest, I'm not talking about deer and rabbits and voles and moles. Let's separate those guys into a different category, and that's a conversation for a different day. When I'm talking garden pests, I'm talking about of the insect persuasion. Your garden pest insects, they are going to come. They're bound to be there. It's just a fact of life. So what are some things that you can do to have a successful garden despite having garden pest? First off, if you do the points that I'm recommending, you're going to have good, solid plants, plants that are strong, they're healthy, and they can put up with some damage because you know that's what's going to come. So you want the healthiest, strongest plants that are going to be able to put up with damage. That is your first defense. The second defense is patience. I know patience is not something that, you know, patience is hard. It's a virtue. We've all heard that expression. Patience is a virtue. And it is, because if you can be patient and let nature take care of herself, because think about it from this perspective. Out of all the insects that are in your garden, did you know that only 3% of those insects are actually harmful to your garden? Only 3%. So what that means is there's a small amount of insects that are going to do damage, but if you can be patient, nature will find the predators. For those pests, for every pest, there's a predator. And if you're just patient, she'll take care of it. They'll go away. Pests or insects, they're lazy. Let's just call a spade a spade. They are lazy. They are going to go for what is, you know, for lack of a better term, the low-hanging fruit. They're going to go for the plants that are weak and need probably to be taken out anyway. It's not common for them to attack plants that are very strong and vibrant. They will attack them, but they prefer to go for the weaker ones because the weaker ones are usually the ones that are going to give up without a fight. So they would prefer the path of least resistance. So again, if you can have some plants, your plants, let them be strong and ready to take on some damage. That is your best defense. Now, what if all of these things that I'm saying, it doesn't work, and you, let's just say you've run out of patience, okay? And it's just not working. And unfortunately, you're like, you know what? I'm going to use an insecticide and I'm going to use an organic one. Okay. If you're going to use an organic insecticide, unfortunately, even those ones, the natural pesticides, I said insecticide, didn't I? I meant pesticide. A natural pesticide, most of them are non-selective, meaning they will kill the beneficial insects along with the non-beneficial insects. So they kill all. So if you're going to use a pesticide, apply it later in the day or even at night when the good guys, your good pests, your good pollinators are likely going to be asleep. There are some pests that you can just simply dispatch on your own. For example, tomatoes. Most of us know the tomato hornworm. And basically, it's not the prettiest thing in the world, if you ask me personally. But basically, the tomato hornworm, you can look it up if you've never seen it before, but it will devastate your tomatoes and your peppers. Did you know that you can take a black light, go out there at night, shine a black light on your tomato plants and your pepper plants, and you will see the tomato hornworm because it will glow? Yeah, give it a try one of these times. Go out at night with a black light and just pluck those guys right off of your tomato plants. Done. You didn't even have to use an insecticide. You didn't have to use a pesticide. You didn't have to do anything. You're just simply by hand taking care of the problem. So there are different ways around pests like that as well. Sometimes you can just do it manually, just get rid of them by hand, and you're better off because then you're not even using a pesticide that will destroy both the good guys and the bad guys. So that's pest control. The ninth one is do not over-fertilize your garden. Now, first off, I'm going to say really do your best to not use fertilizer. Use compost. Make your own compost. That is the number one way to feed your soil. Chop and drop. That's another way that you can feed your soil. There's so many different ways that you can go about creating good, healthy soil. But if you do choose to use a fertilizer, even if it's an organic fertilizer, do not over-fertilize. Read the package, read the instructions, and use it according to the instructions. Don't think in this particular case more is better, because it's not. And let me explain to you why. Excess fertilizer can alter your soil. It'll create a high concentration of salt, and it'll hurt all of the good guys, the beneficial microorganisms that you're trying to create in your soil. It's going to hurt them because they don't like living in soil that has a lot of salt. Over-fertilizing it'll lead to like a sudden plant growth. Like you'll see that your plants are growing. They start to look really good. But then here's the problem that it creates. Because your plants are growing so fast, the root system of your plants can't support that amount of growth. And so what happens is your root system can't adequately water and supply the nutrients to your plant to sustain that growth rate. So eventually what's going to happen is now you've got this poor structure, this poor root structure down below that you're not seeing. And then all of a sudden, your plants and your flowers, they start to lower in production and they go lower, lower, lower until the plant dies because it cannot support such a rapid amount of growth. And then because you've added all of this extra fertilizer, now you've created a situation where there's extra salt in your soil. Now you've changed the pH balance of your soil. Most plants like pH neutral soils because they can take up the nutrients better in a pH neutral rich soil as opposed to one that is alkaline or not. So you really want to make sure that if you do choose to use synthetic fertilizers, whether it's, you know, synthetic, non-organic, or organic, you want to make sure that you are reading and following those instructions very carefully. And then we get to point number 10. And you know, kudos to you if you've lasted this long. This is 10 points on how to grow successfully in your garden. And point number 10 is one of my favorite points. Create an area in your garden, no matter the size of your garden. It doesn't matter how big your garden is. It doesn't matter how small your garden is. No matter the size of your garden, create an area for you to relax. Create an area for you to sit down. Look at some flowers that might be blowing in the wind. Take in a nice, cool summer drink and look at the work that you have done. Look at the beautiful garden that you have created and the produce that is coming out of your garden. Create a little nook just for that purpose, just for you to just sit down, sip on some lemonade or an ice cold glass of water or raw milk, whatever it is, and just enjoy your hard earned work. Because let's face it, gardening, it is hard. But just because something's hard doesn't mean it's not worth it. So embrace the hard and embrace the results and enjoy your garden this gardening season for the year 2023. Super excited. It's go time. Let's go garden. Well, that's it for me here on this particular episode. It was a fun episode for me to do. Anytime we get to talk about gardening, I get super excited, and I hope you get excited listening too. And it's my hope that this gave you some inspiration and, you know, just gives you a little bit of pep in your step to go out there, dust off your gardening shoes, your gardening boots, and get your tools in line and get out there and go gardening, because it's going to be an epic year. So that's it from me and all of us here on our homestead. From all of us to all of you, wherever you are in the world. Happy gardening and stay safe out there.